Welcome to the For the Church podcast, another great gospel-centered resource from Midwestern Baptist Theological Seminary. My name is Jared Wilson. I'm an assistant professor of pastoral ministry and author in residence at Midwestern Seminary. And I'm here as always with my friend and my colleague and my co-host, who's a little out of sorts at the moment for some reason. Ross Ferguson, who now has keys. You should be in sorts because you've got keys suddenly to the Spurgeon Library.
I actually have keys for this building.
Yeah, normally you're waiting outside, yeah. Outside in the hallway. So I was waiting outside in the hallway thinking that's where you're going to be, but you've been in the library the whole time.
Yeah, it's quite nice actually having that like power to open the door. You know, I can unlock a door at Midwestern Seminary. I've reached that height now. I've been here long enough that I now have a key.
Love will open a door.
Yeah.
Well, you're in here, but then we got in here into the studio and you're messing around with the mic. Like the mic was giving you trouble and everything. You just seemed
feel really short. Someone tall was clearly sitting this side of the table because everything feels very high.
Oh.
So I don't know. Maybe Dr. Sakura was in here.
Oh, could be.
Interviewing somebody else.
But he's a very tall man.
I suddenly feel like I've shrunk like half a foot just sitting here. One thing I am noticing sitting across from you is you're growing out the beard.
Yeah.
It's more significant than I think I've ever seen it.
Yeah, so I was on the road the last 10, 11 days, and I didn't take any clippers with me.
Okay.
And so I didn't have a way to trim it back. And then I thought, let's just see what it does.
Yeah. Well, grows. That's what normally happens.
I'm usually a very short beard, stubble guy, like just a little bit more than stubble, because I don't think my facial hair is good. It's a little, it's like wiry or something. It's not a nice beard. It's not a plush beard. But I've never actually really grown it out just to see. So we're going to see how it goes. Until Beck tells me to shave it off.
You work at a seminary, you should have a beard. Like that's the way things go.
Yeah, I guess so. These days, if you're the reform type. Hey, today's the day.
Today is a very special day.
That's right. We're going to finally go see the new Despicable Me. I wanted to say Minions, but it's not
technically
Minions. It's got the Minions in it, but it's a Despicable Me movie.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
We've already had a discussion in our family as to who is sitting where.
Okay.
because
the girls are deciding.
Yes. Okay. Somebody needs to sit next to one of our girls to restrain her. Throughout the entire movie. she's not very good at sitting still.
Okay.
But there has been a discussion already in our house.
Yeah? All right.
Last time we went to see, I think it was Despicable Me 3. The last time we went with you guys, I said to said child who needs to be pinned down to her chair the entire movie, you are not allowed to go out to the toilet during the movie. Jared decides halfway through the movie to go out, to which she like turns around in horror that Jared's allowed to go, but she wasn't. So there has been discussion as to who is allowed to go out during the movie.
Oh.
Because if Jared's allowed to go out, surely it's only fair that the girls get to go out as well. So.
Well, I'll do my best to endure.
Basically, stop drinking liquids before you go in because to save me telling the girls. No, they're very, very excited.
Yeah.
This particular one I think looks funnier than the last one.
So I've been looking forward to it. And then I read yesterday somebody gave it bad reviews.
They said
it's convoluted. It's not as good as the other ones. The plot doesn't go anywhere. But I don't really go to see these movies for the plot.
I was
going to
say, you don't view anything with Minions for the plot.
That's right.
Have you seen the little clip, little video on Facebook or something like that it is, where Taylor Swift has like a scene where they like mimic that she's calling out to Minions. So they've like clipped her song, like as she's singing, they've then dubbed over it and it's like, Minions, today we steal the moon. And then the whole crowd goes crazy. It's the funniest thing.
I'll have to check it out.
So you got to check that out. So we've been watching all these little like Minion videos with hype. We've also had to promise icy slushes and all sorts tonight. So it's the twins are just about to turn 10. So this is like
you know, a birthday celebration.
A month worth of celebrations.
Okay. Well, speaking of celebration, it's a good transition to a topic that I would like to call the Congregation Hall of Fame. And I have a confession to make because my original idea for this episode or an episode like this was something like the four or five people that you meet at church or the four or five people you meet at small group, And I was thinking negatively. I was thinking like, you know, the
people you don't want to be
critical person. Yeah, the emotional black hole and da, da, da. And I thought, why do that? This is for the church. So let's make it positive.
But I'm not normally a positive guy.
Well, this is going to be pushing you outside your comfort zone. The Congregation Hall of Fame. These are the people that you like seeing at church, or the people that make, you know, the experience of church. They're just the unsung heroes sometimes. So I made a list of some types. I don't know.
I'll go first.
So my first type is Mr. or Mrs. Everyday Encourager. Mr. or Mrs. Everyday Encourager always seems cheerful. I know that they have bad days and sad days like every person does, but they just always have a smile for you. They always just want to come up and say, you know, good sermon, or it's good to see you, or they, you know, ask about your family, or there's just, they live to encourage. If someone has the spiritual gift of encouragement, they have it. And they just seem to live to want to edify, and they just walk around just very cheerful and encouraging. And those people don't often get a lot of the credit. They're usually not, you know, in leadership roles per se. They're just... are good, encouraging church members.
I was about to say, it's not the person that just throws the odd encouragement out there. It's someone that you know across the room, they're already thinking about how they're going to encourage you as you walk towards them. Like there's that, just that individual, you just know, like at the end of the service, I'm going to walk towards that person because I just know they're going to be encouraging.
Yeah,
I very much appreciate those. Can a word, because I am more on the negative side. If you are an encourager, just use your words. Please don't ask for a hug. I'm not a huggy person.
Oh, my word, okay.
I'm not a huggy person. So if you could just like use your words and encourage me verbally, like I would appreciate not having to hug everybody.
If Ross rebuffs you, I'd be glad to take his hug for you if you want to come give me a hug.
I'll take the words. You can take the
hug.
Happy
to do it. Happy to do it.
Okay, my first one is the instant volunteer. I absolutely love these individuals in church. The ones that like you could say anything and their hand is going up. Like we need someone to climb the 40-foot wall and help put that tile back on the roof. Their hand goes straight up. I'll do it. I just find those individuals so encouraging because their viewpoint is service to the church. It doesn't really matter what it is. And the one guy I'm particularly thinking of actually at Liberty Baptist is Travis. Travis is somebody who's just like, you can put anything before him. And he's just like, yep, I'll do that. I'll get that sorted out. And he'll send like random texts like, today I'm fixing a drain. Today I'm putting a toilet in the church. Today I'm printing out flyers. Today I'm out walking the streets, inviting people to VBS. I think those individuals deserve more praise and care and love towards them because a lot of church ministry just doesn't happen without those instant hands in the air, I'll do it. So
if I could then bring maybe the negative side to it, it's not really a negative side, but sometimes with those folks, you sometimes have to like caution them about doing too much because they're so eager and you want to say, hey, it's okay to take a break, you know, every now and again, even though we're so grateful for they're so eager to serve.
And there's the type of people that'd be like, I'll volunteer to take a break. Like if you want to volunteer to take a break, I'll volunteer to take a break.
Yeah. Well, that's pretty close. I'm going to go to the last one on my list because it's somewhat close to one I've got, which is Mr. or Mrs. Reliable. And Mr. or Mrs. Reliable is the person who is always going to be a little bit early and they're always going to volunteer for something. And when they do, you know it's going to get done.
Yeah.
And they're going to do it well. Or if they have questions, they're going to ask them. And there's something about the folks that you just, when you know they have a task or a responsibility, you never have to think about it. It just gets done. Once upon a time in my ministry life, had a volunteer in a particular area who was very unreliable. Mm-hmm. And I loved the guy very much. And really was trying to work with him and encourage him and spend a lot of time with him. And it just wasn't improving his reliability. And so eventually had to, and this is, you know, it's difficult to fire a volunteer. It's always difficult to fire anybody, but to fire a volunteer.
Yeah. Thanks.
To say to somebody, this is not working out. It's not serving the church well. And, you know, I'm spending, you know, time before the worship gathering, even having to kind of coach you up into your position and into your role, and that's not just not working out. Mm-hmm. And the person who took his place was, I'll think probably not quite as talented in this area of service. Not untalented at all, but probably not quite as excellent at his craft as this previous person. But what he had that the other person did not was reliability. Yeah. I never had to wonder if he was prepared or not. I never had to wonder if he was going to show up or not. He was never late. He just was steady and reliable. Mm. And man, I will take a talented, reliable person over a super talented, unreliable person every single time. And there's a lot of people like this in our churches, serving in our churches all the time, that, you know, they don't get a lot of praise, but they're just reliable. They show up, they suit up, they're ready to go, and they serve without fanfare, without expectation usually. Mm-hmm. And you just know that you can count on them.
And you can tell that it's more than just the activity they're involved in. So they're not just reliable because they like to be the first in and the last out. They're reliable because you know that they actually want to be reliable, which means that kind of leans into you can use them for more than just the things they're willing to volunteer for. You know, even just like moments of trust, if there's a big event on at church or something like that, and you think, man, we really need someone that we can trust with this situation. You're going to think about the reliable people, the people that turn up. So it's not just being reliable for the sake of a particular ministry. It's being reliable because you're the individual that wants to serve and you want other people to know you can trust me. Mm. I've got a couple more, maybe a little bit more obscure. I'm calling this person the treat giver.
Okay.
The treat giver.
This is a guy with a van and candy or what?
Pretty much. So I was
told to stay away from those people.
I really like the church members that always go beyond a little bit of just like words of encouragement. There's like a little treat they pass on to you. It might be like they had a bag of mints, you know, and they give you like a mint or two, or they've baked cookies and they had some leftovers, so they thought they would share them with you on a Sunday. But you name it, they're just somebody that's like, I like to give you a little treat every so often. So I've served in multiple different churches, and these tend to be the older generation within the church. They'll come up to you and be like, you know, I was shopping in the store on Saturday and I saw this, I just thought of you, and I'll just pass this quietly to you, you know, don't let anyone know. And you look down, it's like a chocolate bar or something like that. And it's just that sense of, this feels like a family. This feels like you're my grandparent, or you're, you know, my brother or sister trying to like secretly give me like a treat that Miriam probably has banned me from having, you know, is that kind of, and the one that I always remember is there was a lady in our last church who knew I liked Iron Brew, so a Scottish soda drink, and she knew that. So every time I visited her, she would always have a can of Iron Brew at the side of the chair so I could drink it. And then without fail, it happened every time. And I kind of had to act surprised each time. She'd be like, I have a little treat for you before you leave. And she would like lift up a bag and there's six cans of Iron Brew. And she was like, don't tell anybody. Right. Don't expect it again. Just a little treat for you. And she would do it every single time. But it was just one of those things of, I think it speaks of a generosity of heart that you're always thinking about the little tiny things you can give people.
Yeah.
Maybe don't cost a lot of money, but it's that effort. It's that I can trust that that person really does have the best interests of me at heart. They really are thinking the best of me because they thought about me when they were shopping. Do you know, they thought about me? And it's not about inflating your own self-worth. It's just recognizing that someone cares for you enough to do that. And, you know, I've had multiple people that will hear my voice get hoarse when preaching. And then I'll sit down and straight away they'll like open their purse and be like, here's a Werther's original, here's a mint, or, you know, and it's just,
they run and get you a cup of water or something. Yeah.
It's just really caring to think like that, to think that I want to give my pastor, my fellow church member, whoever it is, a little treat to remind them you're not alone and I'm a brother or sister in Christ. Yeah. So I call them the treat giver.
The treat giver.
Which, if you're listening to this episode and you go to church or seminary with me, feel free. Feel free to bring the treat.
To give treats. His drink of choice now is Coke Zero.
And that's six-pack. Entirely your fault.
Coke Zero. You know, in the churches that I grew up in, the treat givers tended to be old ladies who in their purse always had some kind of hard candy or a mint or something.
Or Turkish Delight or something.
I think my Grammy always had Tic Tacs.
Uh-huh.
And the white or the green Tic Tacs.
and you could hear, you know, the little maraca shaking thing, and she'd get out and she'd, you know, they'd pass Tic Tacs down the aisle if you wanted a Tic Tac. And there was an older guy in the church that I grew up in. I forget his name, but, you know, always had a suit and would always shake your hand and always would give you like a quarter, like a coin that he would give you. Which I always thought was pretty sweet as a kid to get a quarter. Because back then, a quarter, actually, you get three of those, you can buy a comic book. Today, now a quarter is like nothing.
Hey, I want $10. That's what will give me something.
I mean, adjusting for inflation, it would not be. But even just others, as you said, you know, the thing about like, so maybe it's not someone who has like candy or things, but when you're thinking of others and like, man, I don't know, when you said treat giver, I wasn't necessarily even thinking of my wife per se, but she's always like, you know, baking and cooking for folks.
Yeah,
and over the last like couple of years, like knitting. I mean, it's like what she just sits on the couch like for watching TV or anything, and she's just constantly. And it's always something for something. I'm making a bag for this person, and I'm making, a vest for this person, and I'm making a hat for that person. And it's just, and she's thinking of, you know, who it's for, and she asks them what colors they like and what would they want, you know, and so she's like thinking of the church folks, you know, on Father's Day, the Muir family at Liberty Baptist, they gave me some Bigfoot socks.
I did see this.
And it was so special, you know, first of all, that they would just even think of me, because I'm sure they saw them out somewhere.
Yeah.
And somebody said, you know, Jared's a Bigfoot.
I know a crazy person that believes in this.
We know someone who like cares about Bigfoot stuff. And they thought of me and they got these socks. I thought it was really neat and personal, you know?
There's always these moments. I remember a particular individual several years ago, kind of girl in her probably mid-20s. She had shared in a community group that she had never received flowers, and she had heard like about a married couple doing it and something like that. She was like, "That's really sweet. I've never experienced that before." And so the group arranged to have flowers sent to her home because they wanted her to know, like, you don't have to be in a relationship to receive flowers. We just want to show care to you. And again, it was just that reminder of like what we paid a couple of dollars each or something like that to have it happen. But it's that thought of saying we are more than just church attenders together, even more than church members together, that we are in the body of Christ and you're not far from my thoughts. So if somebody's saying like, I've never had flowers before, well, as a friend, I want you to experience that. I want you to know that you're cared for. And there's nothing weird about it when you just think, actually, I care for you, so I want to share it with you. I think in a seminary setting, that needs to happen more often, as in people need to just have that gentle care for one another more often. So busy studying, you kind of forget the people around you. But in the church, if we were like that, if we were lots of little givings, little treats, what a wonderful place to be to just live daily in.
It'd be wonderful to be getting a bunch of treats, you're right. People would give you a bunch of treats.
And again, less fruit and veg, more.
Okay, my next one is the children's ministry superstar.
Yeah, I've got one of those.
So, and you know, church by church, this may be different, but I think in so many of the churches that I have been a part of, either that I grew up in or have served in as an adult, there's always been the one or two, sometimes more, but usually like there's this one or two, usually ladies, who they're just devoted to the nursery, to the child, you know, to the children's ministry, to the child care. They're the ready volunteer. If it's something related to children's ministry, they're volunteering. You know, you can count on them. They just are rock stars when it comes to caring for kids. And they're like anchors of some kind in those ministries. And, you know, we certainly have those folks at our church. And I was reminded again about them Sunday evening. We had the installation service for, you know, our two newest pastors. And I happened to jet downstairs to look for, I think, a bottle of water or something. And I went through kind of this back area and I got into this hallway, and they had been decorating that afternoon for Vacation Bible School, which is this actually in a couple of weeks. And, you know, stepped into this what looked like an underwater, you know, sea of enchantment. And I thought, there's a group of people who are here this afternoon, because it wasn't like this this morning. So between Sunday morning and the Sunday afternoon, there was a whole group of folks here who gave up their afternoon to get this place looking like an underwater, you know, wonderland. And then I went into the resource room where we keep the bottled water, which, by the way, has been moved. So children's ministry superstars, if you could tell me where that bottled water is, that'd be great. But what was in there instead were all of these like props, these craft things that are made to look like underwater stuff, underwater sea, you know, sandcastles and just, you know, fish and different things. And you could see that these were all handmade things people had spent time to carve and cut and build and construct and color and paint. And
I
know there's a lot of kids involved with that process as well and moms and dads and everything else. But I just was reminded of like, man, how awesome is it when you have people who just love kids and love caring for kids and want kids to know about Jesus. And it sent me back thinking about, you know, all the different, you know, especially women in the churches of my past who just were staples of like, gosh, they just cared for kids and you know, love kids.
Yeah. What I can tell you is I'm not one of those superstars.
Okay. You're a different kind of superstar.
I'm the guy that's like, close your eyes and imagine.
So you're not making the craft.
No.
Yeah, yeah.
But no, and that's why I'm so grateful for them, because there's not a chance I can make those. And here's my next one, the Hungry for More member.
Okay.
This is the individual, I got to be honest, I've had a kind of like a rocky relationship with this type of individual in pastoral ministry. It's the one that always wants another Bible study, another prayer meeting, another book, another piece of advice, lots of questions. What about this theology? What about this doctrine? What should I do here? And just kind of fires constantly at you these questions and desire to know more and learn more. The reason is rocky relationship, because as a pastor, sometimes that can be somewhat infuriating, because you're really busy and you're actually negatively spending too much time on the task and not enough time with the person. Mm. And so over the years, originally I would have seen this person as a distraction. Now I see this as the person to celebrate. This is a person that really desperately wants to know more, wants to dig deeper. And that's your role as the pastor, is to kind of help them dig deeper and point them to Christ and remind them that it's not all about knowledge, but actually there's a beauty in us gaining the knowledge of God's word, spending time with them, praying with them. And over the years, when you find someone like that, your tendency is to want to pass them over to someone else or give them a book or just kind of keep them at arm's length, because they are so excitable, if you will, in terms of wanting more. More recent years, I've been drawing closer to those individuals, because you think, if I only have a year, 2 years, 3 years with you, if I can input everything I know, which isn't a lot in the great scheme of things, but if I can input that into you, maybe you'll stay here and you'll do that with somebody else, or maybe you'll go and serve the Lord somewhere else and you have all this ready, you know, all your questions have been answered because someone spent the time with you. The Hungry to Know More member is someone that I celebrate, because how we long for our members of church to desire to delve deeper and not have surface level stuff. And I think we just need to remember as pastors that we need not ignore those individuals. The task can always be pushed to another day, but the person maybe.
Yeah.
Not. So
that's good.
I have one more, by the way.
Okay. I've got two more. I'm going to go with my, not that one is heavy, but the lighter one, which is, particularly for preaching, I don't know about you, when you're, you know, preaching, you're looking for essentially friendly faces.
Yes.
You know what I mean? A face that just looks serious is fine.
Yeah.
People who look angry can be discouraging.
Yeah.
And what I've discovered is even the people who look angry aren't usually angry. You know, sometimes there are people who are angry, but more than not, it's just people, that's what their resting face looks like. But it's such an encouragement to look out and see people who are nodding, not nodding off, but who are nodding. Yeah, they're nodding their head, and they may not be paying attention to anything that you're saying, but it looks like they are, and that may just be a function of how they listen.
Yeah.
It may not be necessarily that they're agreeing or trying to cheer you on. That's them sort of actively listening. But there's just something, I don't know about you, but when I see the person who's like nodding as they're looking at me while I'm preaching, it just gives you
an extra oomph to keep going.
I feel like, oh, there's somebody who's dialed in and they're, you know, they're receiving this. Nodders and smilers. When I see people who are smiling, you know, not if they're smiling talking to someone else next to them or anything, but if they're looking at me and they're smiling, it just feels like, oh, wow, like we're enjoying the word together and people are really dialed in. And that's such an encouragement. Yeah. It just makes you feel, you know, like what you're doing is not in vain and that the Lord is with you in the midst of it.
And it's not to say that everyone has to do that. It's
I mean, I don't do that. No. I'm not usually nodding at people or whatever. So like, I get it. And I'm not saying if you don't do it, you know, you're not listening to a sermon, right? I'm just saying it's really encouraging to see, you know, the people who do that.
You're the resting angry face.
I think I do have a resting angry face, which is why I said I don't automatically assume that the angry looking people are angry.
I've preached before you a couple of times, and it's the same face each time.
Well, so. With you, I was angry.
Yeah, I appreciate that. But I think going a little bit further than that, I wouldn't normally be the person that looks for audible response. So I'm not ever like writing a line, preaching a line in the hope that I get a response. Yeah. Like I think that's bad preaching just to get a response. But recently I had like a couple of paragraphs. I had the intensity of the sermon was coming out. The beauty of the gospel was being displayed. You know, it was like, here's what we were before. Here's what we are now. The whole thing was coming to a crescendo of, and this is all free to us through Christ Jesus. And it was kind of quiet after I said it. I literally actually said, is it only the worship team you'll clap for? Or is it the gospel you'll clap for?
Whoa.
And it was just one of those moments where you were thinking like, do you really get this? Like, I'm not performing to you. I'm not looking for a response. What I'm hoping though is there's something in you that recognizes the beauty of this. And it was really interesting. A couple of people after me came and had a chat, and they were saying they were so stunned by the gospel message. It was like they were stunned silent of just like hearing this on, which made me go, great, because then I just told you off for not saying anything. So, but you added
a lot of gospel.
Yes, that's why I get the angry face. Yeah. But I think there is a place for audible response if you are that person. I'm not saying you have to do it if you're not, but I think there is a place, and sometimes as a preacher, that can help. It can also hinder, but I think that can help. And I celebrate the individuals that do the head nods, that do the smiles, that write down the notes. Like, I know you're not a massive fan of people writing notes, but just all we're saying is the people are engaged.
No, yeah, you know, like I wouldn't advise necessarily, or I should put it this way. I don't care if someone takes notes or not, but when I see them taking notes, to me, it's indicating they're taking this seriously. Yeah. Which is good. Okay.
I go, you said children, kind of worker, department, superstar.
Yeah.
For me, it's the children.
Okay.
I love having children in church. I am not a fan of pushing the children off to one side and they're just not in the church. I'm a fan of having children in the service, in every aspect of church life. I love the idea of being a family together in church. For many years, I served churches where my kids were kind of off to the side because that's the way the ministry was run. And now I get to have them in the sermons I preach or in the ministries that I'm working in or attending the services we attend. And I think just having children there reminds us is the gospel's for every single age. Yeah. And there is no age limit on the gospel message. And I think children do something to a church that is incredible. And it's this, they don't know church politics. They don't know the ups and the downs and the who said what and what sin and what discipline. They're just there. They're usually happy.
Yeah.
They're usually happy or they're having a tantrum, but then they're just happy to be at church. They take at face value what you're saying is true in terms of being in church. And I think they just changed the atmosphere. It's hard to be a grumpy church when you've got 5, 10, 15, 20 kids that are laughing, smiling, enjoying.
Some people find it easier to be grumpy when there's lots of kids around.
Yeah, this is true. But for me, to the child, every person in the church is a friend.
Yeah.
It's a friendly face. And children just change the feel of a church. And beyond that, it reminds us that long after I'm no longer here, the church will continue. And I think as a pastor, that's something we need to be reminded often. Like, I'm not a big deal, actually. Like, when I'm gone, this will just carry on without me type thing. But just as a fellow church member, it's really encouraging to think the next generation will have the keys of the kingdom and they'll be doing what we're doing, hopefully even better than what we're doing. They will be faithful. They'll be the next gospel-centered movement. They're the ones that are going to, you know, reach into different areas of life. So for me, children are super encouraging, and I've pulpit supplied for multiple churches, and when there's no children in churches, they will often say the same thing. They're discouraged that there is no children in their church.
Yep.
So if you're discouraged that there's no children, ergo, you must be encouraged that there is children. So for me, children are a big part of church. And just like of a word of advice, don't go and put them in another hall, another room and segregate them off. Yes, there's age appropriate moments to do so, but have them in the service, have them part of the family, and they bring joy to it.
You know, the sounds of children in the church service, in any kind of gathering, it's the sound of life, as you said. Like, I mean, I was just thinking of, you know, a previous church when I went, and you know, there weren't a lot of young couples or young families, period. There was maybe two or three, but there, you know, there hadn't been a baby born in a little while. And I happened to be, you know, the pastor when the next baby was born.
Yeah.
And just how it changed, like when you heard the first cry in the middle of the service, you know, and nobody was upset about that at all. Everyone was like, this is amazing. You know, it was a sign of life, of the church growing younger and you know, and not just the children, but the, you know, couples and families who are, you know, having children tend to be younger couples and families. And so even that in of itself is an indication of like the church generationally getting younger or being multi-generational.
Yeah.
Those are encouraging signs. So you're right. We shouldn't begrudge that at all. You shouldn't take it for granted, because there are a number of churches out there that would love to be in the situation of, where are we going to put all these kids?
Yeah.
And you know, how come it's so noisy? And the, you know, and all those sorts of things.
Kind of all fits together, like the Mr. and Mrs. Encourager. They're going to encourage the family, encourage the kids to be in church. The treat giver is probably going to get the kids a little treat. You know, it kind of all fits part of that family. And if you don't have that part in your church, like you know something's missing. So if you do have that as part of your church, don't take it for granted. Don't waste it either. It's enjoy that. Don't hear the complaints of people going, oh, it's a bit loud here, I wish the children weren't here. Remind them the joy of the gospel and the future of the church, and then crack on with having kids in the service, you know?
Okay, so my last one, I really struggle with what title or name to give this person. And so what I've come up with is the emotional anchor, Mr. Emotional Anchor. And kind of like reliable, but it's somebody whose presence is just really reassuring. And you feel secure when they're around. Sometimes it's a very fatherly type. Sometimes it's just someone who's a very stable, reliable, encouraging, positive person. Someone who's very competent at what they do or what they know. Or just someone who's not, when I say anchor, someone who's not easily rattleable.
Not flighty.
Yeah. And so as I started thinking back of like, who was I so grateful to have in my church experiences? And so like I think of a good friend, a friend of mine named David, who was kind of my right-hand guy at our church plant years ago. And David's just, he's very steady. He's just a very steady presence, no emotional ups and downs, and cheerful, I mean, you know, but just very reliable and just reassuring. And so there were things that we were trying to do in our church plant that were a little daring, just in terms of like missionally and those sorts of things. And I remember when I had the, you know, crazy idea that we should give 60% of our income away. Like for every dollar we receive, 60 cents goes back out the door. And I was presenting this to the leadership team. And they're like, we're going to like introduce this concept. We're going to restructure our budget. We're going to call it Bold as Love. And we're going to give 60%. And like everyone around the table, like nobody said, we're not doing that.
Yeah.
But you could see there was some like, oh, I mean, 60, like we're going to live on 40%. And you look over at David and David's like, yeah, if that's what the Lord wants us to do, he'll provide for us. You know, it'll be fine. And David was the finance guy. So if anybody knew where our finances were or what was feasible or not feasible, it'd be him.
Yeah.
And he was just like, you know, this, you know, it sounds like it pleases the Lord. It makes sense. I think it's going to be fine. And when David said it's going to be fine, I thought, oh, it's going to be fine.
Yeah.
There was a fellow at my last church, Deacon Dale, who eventually became an elder, Elder Dale. And he was one of these guys, older guy. I don't know if he was quite enough to be my dad, but, you know, older and just had like a fatherly kind of presence, but just very steady and very unrattleable. And if something came up where I was getting a little anxious or whatever, I knew if I could just sit down with Dale or have lunch with Dale, things would be calm after that. And he just had a very reassuring presence, the emotional anchor.
Yeah. And it's interesting because we wouldn't necessarily celebrate them week in, week out, because we don't realize they're there until we really need them there.
Right. Do you notice that?
The way I phrased it is, when everything is a struggle and decisions need to be made and everyone kind of looks to the ground trying to like, oh, how are we going to manage this? It's the guy whose head is still up, who's still going, okay, let's see what we can do here.
Yeah, he doesn't panic.
And you don't know it until they're there. And then you turn around in hindsight, and you think, wow, like this person has been this. And, you know, just yesterday I met with somebody to kind of just discuss a matter with them. And the reason I actually chose this individual is because he is like that. Mm-hmm. He never seems to flap or flight. It's just like, he's cool. And his advice is always kind of sound when he speaks. So yeah, I think there's probably more than a few of those in your church. Yeah. And I think it's just, you have to find them to mm-hmm. some extent. And once you do find them, it's kind of anchor yourself to them because you know that ministry always goes crazy at different levels, yes. busyness and just the sheer amount of pastoral care, having that person to just be like, it's going to be okay.
Yeah.
Is really helpful.
And I know like none of these guys themselves are perfect. I'm sure they have, you know, anxieties or stressors mm-hmm. and things like that in their own life. But for whatever reason, they don't let those things or those yeah. things don't tend to run them, control them, mm-hmm. rule over them. They're not exhibiting those things. They're not passing on anxiety or those things at, yeah. in a contagious way. And so, yeah, I'm not trying to say it's like somebody who just never feels anything or whatever, but for whatever reason, they just emotionally, they're very steady and
they
very
take
stable.
Things in their stride. We've mentioned this before on the podcast that an author or kind of name in history, if you will, J.I. Packer was really known for this, just very steady, just knew the trials of life and was just steady through them. And yeah, we do need to celebrate these individuals because actually they don't know they're doing anything special, if that makes sense. They're just being the steady emotional support. And sometimes I've done things like gifts and thank yous and different things in the past. And these are the people that are usually shocked that you're getting them something because they're just like, I didn't do anything. I was just there. And they're like, you don't realize just being there is sometimes enough.
That's great. All right. The Congregation Hall of Fame. If you enjoyed this podcast, give us a good review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. And until next time, may Jesus be big in your church. You've been listening to the For the Church podcast, hosted by Jared Wilson, found online at ftc.co. This resource is brought to you by Midwestern Baptist Theological Seminary in Kansas City, Missouri, where we train leaders for the church.